welcome back to another edition of Sideline Sessions with Wesley Sykes. I am, of course, Wesley Sykes, the managing editor of Coach and Athletic Director, Training and Conditioning, and Winning Hoops Brands for Great American Media Services. And you can listen to all of our previous episodes anywhere you can access podcasts, as well as any of our websites. That's coachad.com, training-conditioning.com, and winninghoops.com. And be sure to follow all of our brands on Twitter. That's at coach_AD, at train condition, at winning hoops, and myself, as always, if you like, at Wesley Sykes _. And today, welcome back to the program, Rob Miller, a proactive coaching partner, motivational speaker, and commissioner of the Wolverine Hoosier Athletic Conference of the NAIA. Thank you for joining us and welcome back to the program, Rob. How are you?
It's always good to be back, Wesley. It's you know, that time of year, and it's fun to be back. We're kind of inside watching sports inside, but heating it up, and good time to talk sports.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, as we all kind of reconvene, the timing of this here. This is kind of the first week of the new year. And I'm interested from a coach's perspective, how you kind of handled the Christmas break. Of course, I'm sure there's holiday tournaments and things, so you're not really on a full break there, but and how you kind of enter the new year refreshed and refocused.
Well, you know, I think it's different where you're at. You know, there's so many different variables in coming back from a holiday, depending on when you're playing, you know, what sport you are. Are you training to, you know, that upcoming indoor track meet? Or on the other hand, you have a basketball tournament that you come back on the 26th, have one day of practice, and you're playing the 27th. So I think there's all those variables. And, you know, I think the big key for me is that you have to make sure that you've set it up and you've let the expectations flow for your kids so they know what they're coming back to. You know, hey, because we have a game in 48 hours, get ready. You know, first practice, we're going to get that. We're going to get to get you sweating. And then the second one, we're going to walk through or whatever it is, but make sure they understand the expectations. But I think the second thing may be more important, and that's refresh. And what I mean by refresh the mind here is kind of get them back on target. Here's our goals. Here's our values. Here's our standards. Here's how we're trying to reach those. Because when they go away, that's probably been gone for 2 or 3 days. You know, in some cases, 2 weeks, depending on what your sport is. And come back and regroup them and get them refocused. So it's not just the physical side of it. It's the mental side that goes hand in hand with it.
Now, do you have any goals that, again, change from the start of the season goals that you have with the team and then enter with the new year? Or is that just kind of an arbitrary date in the terms of the sports season on the calendar?
Well, you know, I think there's two things. When you're talking about your goals, there's no doubt, you know, you probably want to evaluate your goals, where you are with your goals. And that's probably an ongoing thing during the course of the year, you know, and you have to read that as a coach. When it comes to your values and your covenants, the goal is you're not changing those. You're getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into those. And so kind of two different things, your goals and objectives, which are results-based, versus your covenants and your values, which are choice-based. And so one is you got to reevaluate and say, how are we doing, where we're going, what do we need to do to make sure we reach them? And the other one is how are we doing, where we're going, but how can we dig deeper into this? So two different avenues.
Okay. All right. Now, I was recently coming across a story when I was looking for some online content for our website, and it was one, I want to say it was from the Evansville Courier and Press. I believe that's correct there. And it was a opinion-based article about the trend. I'm not sure if it's a new trend. I think it's probably been ongoing about maybe parents holding student athletes back in order to get maybe a little more maturity, a little more seasoning within the sport in order for them to excel. Maybe with the end goal of getting a higher likelihood of a college scholarship. And I was just interested in it. They presented, you know, a couple of different coaches and athletic directors and parents who kind of presented both sides of the argument from either side of the fence there. But I was wondering, you know, maybe from your perspective and from what I assume as a coach and maybe a father there, what are your thoughts about this practice and where do you kind of fall on that?
You know, Wesley, when you sent me this, it was fascinating to me because it took me back because you're right. It's not a new thing. But on the other hand, it also took me to the present because of the COVID issues.
Right.
And first thing I thought, you know, we're here today because the National High School Athletic Coaches Association is sponsoring us. Right. And I'd love to get, I thought when I got that, I said, we need to ask those guys what's going on in all different avenues in sports, because I'm sure it's different in a lot of different sports and avenues. saying that, you know, my own personal thoughts on this. One, in some ways, I'm a product of it, but I'm not a product of it from an athletic side.
Mm-hmm.
I probably benefited athletically, but I was born in July. Okay.
Right.
So when my folks came along, you know, I'm number four of number four. They're looking at me and deciding we're going to send him when he's five or six to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
They decided six because I think the stats show, you know, boys at that age mentally, you know, maturity wise, probably aren't as good. You know, the females are ahead of them at that point,
right.
You know,
right.
Probably are the rest of our lives. But as we go through it, so they didn't hold me for athletic purposes. They held me for maturity and educational purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I benefited from that. I was probably one of the oldest in our class, and it probably benefited me athletically. I can't say it did. I wasn't looking at it that way. But I think there is your key factor. And what I mean by that is, why are you holding people?
Right.
If we're holding people athletically from getting their education, have we really done what's best interest of the child, or what's best interest of somebody's ego? And right. that to me is the break point. Now, how is this thrown in COVID? I think is interesting, because what's happening in COVID, obviously in high school, I mean, we watch a college game now, you know, you don't know how many years these kids have left. You don't, you know, a red shirt sophomore that's 24 years old, you know, I mean,
right.
Why? Because they have all this eligibility. So that's expanded. But watch a game. It's pretty obvious when a 25, 26-year-old is sitting up against a 19, 20-year-old from a physical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But on the high school end, some of these kids lost a year, and they're not getting it back.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting point, right?
Yeah, and so that to me is the one, you know, I think we're – I'm not saying I agree with holding kids back athletically, but now what's the purpose? If it's for scholarship, I'm not for it. But mm-hmm. in some ways, my big thing is if they're not going to be – if they've passed all their academic requirements, we shouldn't be holding them back for athletic purposes. That's my personal opinion with that. But I do sympathize with kids that lost a year of competition – and in some states, maybe year and a half of competition,
mm-hmm.
that they haven't had that experience, and now they're 2 years into it. So I think there's pros and cons. I personally wouldn't hold any back for an athletic purpose. And I'd also say this. There's no doubt kids who got held back would be bigger, stronger, faster. But I think you and I have seen this time and time again. That neutralizes the moment you get against somebody that's skilled.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And it's interesting too, because right from the top of your response there, you mentioned it might vary sport to sport. And I think one of the stories I wrote, you know, years ago was involved hockey players, high school hockey players. And that sport seemed to be one about going to prep schools and juniors and getting held back and everything. And then entering college as a, you know, potential 21-year-old freshman in a lot of ways, you know, and all the coaches that I spoke to said you needed that seasoning just to be able to, if you have that aspiration and that talent of making the NHL or a high ranking level, then that's tends to be the route that a lot of players go through. And I found that kind of interesting.
Well, to me, it is and it isn't. And why I say that is you're right. Hockey is there. I mean, mm-hmm. in our conference, we have hockey in our conference, and all those kids would be considered non-trad students, right? Because they're older. They went someplace else.
Right.
But is that because they mature faster? Or is that because the way the system is set up? And the reason mm-hmm. I said it, baseball set up a different system, right? You come out of high school. It's not that those kids, you know, it's how the system is set up.
Right, yeah.
Versus
yeah, that's
necessary.
Interesting.
If the system was set up naturally, guess what? You'd have 22-year-olds going to play hockey. Now, would they be as big, strong, and fast? No, but that would be the way the system was set up. The system mm-hmm. for hockey just over time set itself up to go to juniors and then be a non-trad and then move on. That's my opinion. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting point. And again, I would encourage the listeners out there to go check out that article. Again, I think I believe it's the Evansville Courier and Press. And one of the parents that they spoke to was saying that they were facing a similar situation with their son about, do we hold him up? And he was a great athlete, but you know, maybe could have used an extra year before heading off to college. He was also a straight-A student. And the husband and wife were going back and forth kind of talking about it. And they ended up saying, you know, he's a straight-A student. He's already this great athlete. He doesn't need anything extra. And he ended up becoming, you know, a doctor years yeah. down the road. So, you know, clearly worked out for him. And it's funny. I think it is on a you know, individual basis there. But again, I think with your unique perspective, I was interested on your opinion there.
You know, I think that, Wesley, that goes right to what I just ended presentation this morning with about 75 coaches. Mm-hmm. And one of my comments in there is, remember who you're coaching.
Right.
You know, and I think parents have to remember who those kids are too. We all have to. You were looking at them as a 16, 17 year old, 15, 16, 17 year old athlete. But who are they going to be in 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of them could be still in that athletic realm, no doubt. Very small percentage, but some could. But most of them are going to be that doctor, that police officer, that, you know, whatever that is down the road, the nurse, whatever it is. And that's cool. And that's, we just have to have that. You have to have that balance. Mm-hmm. It all comes down to what's in the best interest of the student.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the big things that you discuss is playing with confidence, right? And how important that is just for on an everyday basis, just entering everything you do, I think, with confidence. But does that, having that extra maturity, do you think that ties into playing with confidence, or is that a false manufactured sense of confidence that is fleeting? You know, once you get to the whatever next level, or again, you go up against skill, then that can be neutralized.
Yeah, I think there's always that, you know, right? It's like, mm-hmm. you know, you're confident when you're that junior high, your best kid at your junior high team, right? You're 6th, 7th grade, you're the best kid, you're confident. And then all of a sudden, 4 junior highs mesh into 1 high school. Right. And all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, this kid's here just big, strong, and fast as I am. And then that confidence, you have to regain it. So the only way to get that true confidence, as we say, is through preparation and demonstrated success. That's our mm-hmm. proactive model. You know, you have to prepare, and then you have to go out and get it done. And you're not that success isn't always done in games, right? That success comes from doing it on the playground, sure. in the weight room, then in practice, and then in competition. So it's a step scale on that success. That's what gives you that true competition. I like the way you phrased that a lot, because you said, you know, is it good until it becomes false, basically. Kind of right. kind of follows the Mike Tyson quote, right? Everybody yeah. has a plan and take a punch in the face, right? Same type thing. Everybody has a plan and is confident until they look across and they go, whoa,
look at right. that. Yeah. Well,
if you're skilled and you've done it before, you look at that person that's bigger, stronger, faster, you go, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, so as a coach, what do you think about the phrase fake it till you make it? Because I feel like that's almost kind of what I was getting at. Maybe that's an offshoot of what I was saying before. If you have that confidence, maybe you have it there, and then it could carry over.
Fake it till you make it, to me, says fake it until you better be prepared. You better start working on your weaknesses and get them ready, because that's the only way you're going to make it.
Sure.
Yep. So, I mean, I get the phrase and what they're saying. You can't walk out there and feel defeated. You have to walk out there and say, I can do this. But over time, how you're going to do that is put the time in, put the work
mm-hmm,
in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, what are some ways, again, I think this kind of ties into playing with confidence and kind of building off that question. What are some ways that you could teach attitude or developing, as you say, developing attitudes of gratitude to your student athletes?
Well, the first thing I think is huge is you have to define what that gratitude or that athletic attitude is.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, that's probably since our last Zoom, our last interview, I've had a couple of questions asking me that kind of set me back, and I knew it, but it was kind of like, whoa. I had a college student ask me, Coach, can you define integrity? I don't know what it means. I had a high school question. Athlete. Yeah. I had an high school athlete go, what does indifference mean? And I'm thinking, well, throughout that, you got to have an attitude of gratitude. You got to have an athletic attitude. But until we define it, it doesn't matter, because mm-hmm. if we're on different pages or they don't know, it doesn't matter. So I think the first thing is we have to make sure we define what that means so our athletes can see that and say, oh, that's what it is. Then the second way we do it is we model it, right? We mm-hmm. we have to show what that attitude of gratitude is. So whatever that attitude of gratitude is, we have to have that. And I'll give you just a quick example that in some ways I liked it, in some ways I didn't like it. Okay. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
You probably saw the video that came out about 2-3 weeks ago with the Houston basketball player. And it's at the end of the game and Houston lost, and they come out and the coach, you know, Calvin Sampson, who I like, you know, mm-hmm. kicked the trash can, and the other people bounced the water bottles off the thing. And the one player stopped and started picking.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was fantastic. That right. What a great moment of an attitude of a positive attitude. You know, I'm disappointed, I'm mad, I'm upset, but I'm going to take the time. We don't leave things like this, okay? Mm-hmm. it upset me other people didn't. You know what else upset me? How many people took pictures of it and didn't offer to help?
Yeah, right. That's today's society. But I did notice a couple people did follow his lead. A
couple came in at the end and started helping, right? But so many people said, oh, I want to take a picture of this. Why don't you put your phone down and go over and do it? Okay? I think that's the way we show an attitude of gratitude. It's not only define it, we then have to be the first ones to do it. Simple things by saying thank you. Simple things by making sure if something's dirty, we clean it up. That starts infecting other people to say yes. Then the third thing is tell them exactly how you want them to act, right? I mean, in this situation, if somebody corrects you, here's how you respond to that. When an official makes a bad call, we're not going to go, it's a waste of energy to argue it, right? No one's ever changed a call. So how are we going to, you might disagree with it. How are you going to respond to that? You might not say thank you for a bad call, obviously. But an attitude of gratitude says I'm not going to turn this into a jerk moment. I'm going to walk away from this, hold my head high, boom. So define it, model it, and then give clear expectations of what it looks like in situations.
Yeah, you know, and just another moment that just kind of popped out at me when you were mentioning that, I think, you know, of course, I've said this many a times on the podcast, huge New England Patriots fan. I was watching the game this past weekend. It was against Jacksonville, route of a game. One of the Jacksonville defensive ends gets called for hands to the face or roughing the passer. And he's standing right next to the, you know, huge 6'6", you know, 280-pound guy just standing over this referee as he's making the call. And I'm just kind of waiting for another flag to get thrown for intimidation or something. But he ends up shaking the referee's hand, saying good call, and then moves on. And they show the highlight, and because it looked like it was almost like a 50-50 call. But you could see that he actually, you know, did get the hands to the face or whatever the penalty was at the time. And it was the correct call. And it was like, oh, you know what? He actually was like, you got me there. Good job. Yeah. Take the hand, move forward.
That's right. That, you know, and we have to understand whether it be the athletic trainer, whether it be the coaches, whether it be teammates, whether it be the opponents, we don't have competition without any of them. So we better be grateful for them. You know, I want my opponent and I to get after each other. I want us to be unbelievable competitive, you know, get after each other, play hard. But to understand, they're my opponent, not my enemy. The referees, we need them. You know, not going to always agree with their calls, but we need them. We're grateful they're there. They're not my enemy. And I think too many times we walk in with this hostileness. That's the enemy. It's not the enemy. It's our opponent. And there's two different thoughts there. I'm grateful for my opponent. Not that I'm not trying to beat them. I am, man. But I'm grateful for them. Or otherwise, we don't have competition. I'm grateful for our athletic trainers. Think about the last 2 years.
Sure.
Without our athletic trainers, we don't play. Right?
And the same thing with the gratitude of the opponent, too. I think, you know, just not having the option to play a game there, just, you know, having someone else to be able to be there and show up and play, you know, that I think that's an easy, tangible thing to point to over the last 2 years to be able to instill some gratitude to your team or program.
That's right. We're just grateful to be in fact, one of the great stories I have is in my conference, we ended up playing all our championships in the spring and at our women's soccer championship. This would have been last year in 2021. So in the spring of 21, we're having our 20 championship. And it's one of those cold days. It was in Grand Rapids. It's a cold day. It's 35 raining. You know, you don't want to be outside, but here you are. You're outside. At the end of the game, one of the girls comes up from the women's soccer team and just says, thanks. And I go, no, thank the people that are here. She goes, no. She goes, thanks. We never thought we'd have the opportunity to play.
Mm-hmm.
They were just grateful for the competition.
Right.
And that we got to remember that. This, if nothing taught us anything the last 2 years, this can be taken away like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be grateful for what we have.
Yeah, no, I think that's some great points there. And again, you and Bruce Brown with proactive coaching, what are some of the traits that you and Bruce have identified in elite competitors here as we do kind of a hard shift? And maybe as a coach, how do you go about enhancing some of those traits in individuals, maybe while not hurting the team as a whole?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and I come back to the group that sponsors us, the National High School Athletic Coach Association, because we went out to coaches across the country and kind of asked this question, not only from our own experience, but what about you guys? What do you see out there in your athletes? You know, what brings them apart? And Bruce ended up writing a book with 13, what we call the book, it's called Compete for Proactive Coaching. And it's just 13 traits that really stand out with those elite competitors. And I'm not going to mention them all, but I did want to mention a few of them.
Sure. Yeah, please.
The first one is they're passionate. Mm-hmm. Competitive athletes are passionate. They don't ever come dead-eyed. You know, they don't walk in like, oh, another practice. They walk in with their motor running, ready to go. Doesn't have to be, you know, sometimes when we use the word passionate, people think that has to be, you know, loud and boisterous. That's me. I understand that. That's who I am. But that isn't it. They come in just, our eyes are on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You look at them and they are ready to go. Competitive, elite competitive athletes don't leave anything to chance. They're passionate when they walk in the weight room. They're passionate when they walk into practice. They're passionate when they go into a game. They leave it there. So that's that first trait that I think really stands out. The second one I think that stands out on elite competitors is they've learned to control the controllables.
Mm-hmm.
They don't waste energy on things that are outside of their control. Think about something. You know what's outside of your control? The speed, strength, or size of your opponent. I can't worry about that. I'm going to worry about what I'm going to do and how I'm going to face this. That's an elite competitor. An elite competitor doesn't worry about the weather. You know, it was kind of interesting watching that game the other day. Was it Sunday night, the Vikings and the Packers?
Right, right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I got recruited to play college football. I walked down to play college basketball. Why? I'm a wimp. I like 72 degree heated gyms, you know.
Sure.
But I'm thinking, have you ever seen the Packers worry about what the temperature is going to be?
No, it's actually my favorite thing when I see offensive linemen in the snow. They come out sleeveless or you know, pregame warmups and everything. They're in shorts and t-shirt. They don't care. You know, it's an intimidation thing, I think.
That I can't control it, so why don't I use it to my advantage? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't waste the energy. They understand where their energy needs to go and where it's that to, their effort and their attitude. That's that third trait that's in there. The fourth trait that I wanted to mention is they're unselfish. Mm-hmm. And that comes right to your question of, I think when we train athletes and we work them to be these elite competitors, if that unselfishness is there, then you don't worry about how all that's going to do is the team rises. And let me give you examples because we've heard these. Think about the players. When they play, they make everybody else better. Right? Mm-hmm. Players that were average over on that team become these unbelievable players on this team. Why? People make them better. Just before Christmas, I went to a high school basketball practice. And there's a young man on this team that's really good. Okay, I mean, really good. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the best players that's come through this program probably 15 years. And I watched practice, and I hadn't seen him practice this year. I was there an hour and a half. During the whole practice, he shot the ball one time. Now, he could be shooting it every time because he could shoot the lights out.
Sure.
And I went up to his coach afterwards. I said, what's he doing? I said, did you notice what he's doing? I said, yeah, he's passing off. He's making sure the ball. He said, that's what he does every practice. He makes sure he sets up his players for his teammates for success. That's unselfishness. In games, he'll do the same thing, but then he might take that three-pointer. He might take that drive when it's needed. That's that unselfish mentality. Where can I make every decision I make, I'm making for my team, never making for the team. Then the last one I just mentioned is this. They're relentless.
Yeah.
They just don't stop. I mean, you know, it's one of my favorite stories, and I know Bruce put it in the booklet too, but years ago at the Super Bowl, Don Beebe, if you remember, the Cowboys were beating the Bills, just racking up on them. I think it was like 52-17.
Sure, yep.
And Leon Lett gets the fumble and runs all the way, and he's going to go into the end zone, and Don Beebe never stopped for 80 yards and not only tackled him, caused a fumble, got the ball back. The game was over. The game was over about 30 minutes ago. He didn't stop. Elite competitors never stop. One of my things I love to do when I'm at high schools, doesn't matter the sport, sit back and watch who plays and coaches the whole game.
Right.
And who decides to quit coaching when the game's decided. Because the game might be decided long before the game's over. But do you keep coaching? That, to me, is the key. Keep coaching. If you're a coach, be relentless. If you're a player, we don't stop. You play every possession out. You play every point out, whatever you're, you know, every second. If you're a wrestler, you play every second out until that match is over.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is the relentlessness of a elite competitor. So that's just four of the 13 things we kind of get into.
And I think just on your last point there, you know, I think from a spectator, whether you're in the stands or watching a big game at home, I think you can tell when a team gives up, when a coach stops coaching, when a player stops playing. I think that's evident. And even if it's kind of mass, I think you can kind of feel it in a certain way. It's almost like a sixth sense, in a certain way. I think you can just kind of tell.
And we have to be smart. And what I mean by that is, I don't even know any of the specifics. I just saw the headlines of a basketball game that ended like 92-4.
Yeah,
the other day.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yep.
Okay, be smart. Just, it doesn't mean I have to score, but I'm going to execute. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We can execute. We can get after it and play hard without scoring, you know, as it comes to that. You know, so you have to balance that with the you don't want to embarrass your opponents again. But at the same time, you never want to stop playing.
I know, you know, it's so fun because I just wrote another story up of that as well. And it reminded me back of a baseball team in the area here. This made national news just out of, you know, South Coast, Massachusetts. But they scheduled the wrong team. There was two Cristo Rays, one of which was a good baseball team, the other which was a new kind of upstart program. And they scheduled the upstart program and not really know it. And the game ended up being like, I want to say it was like 60-3, something crazy like that, in a baseball game that had the mercy rule. And I remember the coach, you know, it ended up making the rounds on the internet and everything. The coach, really good guy, torn up about it. But I remember talking to him, it's kind of like, what happened? And they were trying to bunt, and the other team just wasn't skilled there. So again, they were trying to give them, so I guess there's probably more that they could have done, but playing the game, but also trying to give themselves up in a certain way. I got, if there is that uneven of a match, I got to imagine from the winning head coach's perspective, it could be difficult.
Oh, it is. You got to have the balance. How can we compete? And at the same time, how can we not embarrass? You know, it's a thin line because you don't want to tell kids to give up. And at the same time, there's a point when you might have to say, okay, guys, you know, you're going to make an out here.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly here. So, That's great. So I want to bring back this segment. We haven't done it in the last few episodes here, but of course, five questions that have nothing to do with sports. So if you're okay with this, I want to see if you're ready to hop back in for the new year.
Let's go. We'll All see right. what 22 brings.
Yes, exactly here. So recently, you may have heard this, I-95 was shut down in the DMV, Virginia area for upwards of a day due to like a 6 tractor trailer pileup and a snowstorm and whatnot. I hate traffic. My wife knows this, or anyone who sat in a car with me, especially traffic for the sake of traffic, drives me nuts. Is there anything worse than being stuck in your car on the highway for 24 hours, in your opinion, you know, or is that as worse as it gets?
Well, that's a pretty as bad as it gets, I guess. I did have to sleep the other night in the Salt Lake airport all night. That borders on it, but I don't think it's worse than having to be in your car all night long. So
yes. Okay. Yeah. I know. I would imagine that would also drive me anywhere where I just feel trapped. You know, that's kind of what it boils down to for me there. Okay. So New Year is upon us, but Christmas just happened. You know, is there a favorite gift of yours throughout your life that jumps out in your mind? Childhood, adulthood, somewhere in between?
You know, it's not a gift I've given. It's not a gift I've received. It's probably a gift I've given. Just when you give something to your kid and you see that eye light up, I don't care what the gift is. It's not the gift. It's the reaction to the gift, and you see their eyes light up. And my daughter's 26 now, but when she grew up, she's an unbelievable Harry Potter fan, still is. Sure. And just to give her anything that, along that would just light her up, that to me is – that's the best part about Christmas, is watching other people light up when they get something and they understand it. It's not the gift. It's the people behind the gift, the meaning behind it.
I like that here. I think I will go in a similar vein. I just recently got, well, this is maybe a little bit on the selfish end, tickets for my wife and I and a couple other, two extra tickets, but to Steve Winwood and Steely Dan. So off of that, what is a, what's a bucket list concert for you that you would like to see?
Wow. There you go. I'm going to go back, and this will date who I am and where I'm from. And I've already seen him once, but I'll go back. I wish you'd travel one more time. Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I love that. That's great.
That to me is one of my favorite groups of all time. Though I admit, one time I ran into a Lyle Lovett concert by accident. It was on this down in Seattle, and I fell in love with that too. But if I had to pick one, I'd go back to hear Seeger.
All right. Now, I know this is usually five questions that have nothing to do with sports, but we have the college football national championship coming up pretty soon here. Who you got? Alabama, Georgia in the rematch?
You know, I saw something yesterday that swung my vote. There's been four times since they started this playoff that two teams that have played each other, this is the fifth time, played each other during the season, have played each other in the championship game. Yep. And never has the same team won.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. So I'll go with Georgia. I don't ever count Saban out of anything with that team.
It's tough.
But I'll go with Georgia to win it this time. They'll come back from their loss. I think they have a little bit I don't know what happened, but, man, if that team that showed up against Michigan shows up against Alabama, that's going
to
be tough.
I was really looking forward to that Michigan-Georgia game, thinking it was going to be just a battle of the trenches there with the offensive line and just Georgia's defense being as stout as it was. And the way they manhandled that offensive line of Michigan, I was really blown away. I knew they had one of the best defenses in the country, but very impressive.
Sit watching that game with your wife who's a Michigan fan.
Yeah. Oh, geez. That's got to be tough there. Yeah. a lot of Massachusetts players, products there, maybe on the lower end, but I love that Harbaugh likes to go to the MIAA for recruiting there. So I always appreciate that. And last but not least here, of course, we mentioned we're in the new year here. Do you have any New Year's resolutions that you would like to share, or are you going to give us the Bill Belichick treatment?
No, you know, I read something the other day that I think kind of, I don't ever make resolutions. It's just nothing I've ever done.
Sure.
But I think there's I just read something the other day. It was a couple FCA guys and John Gordon working together. And their whole promise since 99, and I really like this concept, isn't a resolution. It's one word to live by for the year. Okay? I read that, and I was thinking about it, and I've come up with mine, and that's just cherish. I want to cherish the things that happened in 22. And I was explaining this to the coaches today I was talking to. Working with a lot of student athletes, I just think I understand that they're trying to have any kind of normalcy. So let's make sure we cherish things that may seem normal, aren't necessarily normal to what happened to our kids the last 2 years. So let's cherish them. Let's don't worry about it. I had a 4.5-hour flight delay yesterday. Now, a month ago, that might have just set me over the edge. Yesterday was like, okay, let's pull out a book and read. I'll cherish my time here, my alone time. So that's kind of the word I'm living by for this year. So just a little bit different.
That is a great way to avoid stress. I love that. I think that's a great way to look at things. I'm just looking to become more handy. You know, first time homeowner here. I just want to become handy. I want to be Tim the Toolman Taylor around the house. That's it.
You know, I always tell my wife and people, I'm really good at destruction and not very good at construction.
Yes, I love this. So my goal, over Christmas break and New Year's, I put in flooring in our basement here. So nice snap vinyl flooring. I'm going to be building a bar soon down there, and then
that's pretty good. That's pretty handy right there.
Well, you know, it's YouTube videos, really. So I'm not sure. You know, we'll see how everything works out. But I'm tackling each project one YouTube video at a time. But I think you survived. First winner of the year. Five questions that have nothing to do with sports. He came out swimmingly. So, Rob, thank you so much. And thank you to the NHSACA for taking the time to speak with us here today. And again, where can the people get in touch with you as always?
Well, first of all, thank you to you guys for giving us a platform, partnering with you both groups to make these things happen. Proactive Coaching, you can contact us. Well, you can go to our website at proactivecoaching.info. Follow us on Facebook, Proactive Coaching LLC. I don't know how you find us. We're on the others, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. I don't know how you find it, but search it.
Type in proactive searching. Yeah.
Proactive coaching surfing, and you'll find us. But, anytime, we love to talk to coaches who want to be intentional about culture. So give us a call. Look us up. We'd love to chat with you.
Awesome. And on our end of things, you can follow all of our brands on Twitter at coach_AD. At Train Condition, at Winning Hoops, and then myself, as always, if you like, at Wesley Sykes _. And until then, sports fans, I'm Wesley Sykes, and thank you for listening to another edition of Sideline Sessions, and thank you, Rob.
Thank you, guys. Have a good 22.